A Wind Down Media programming exclusive. KVYN 99.3 FM.
Wine Country Live with special focus now for the next 50 minutes or so on the topic of those who are running for supervisor in Napa County. In this case, it's District 3, following up on yesterday's visit with District 1 candidates. And if you're a voter in District 3, you'll want to pay close attention and listen in as we talk with the four who have joined us today. C.O. Perez is here, Matt Hooper, John Dunbar, and Anna Schutto, and the other two candidates in the race, Ann Cottrell and Rafael Rios, could not be here. Ann Cottrell had a conflicting commitment, and Rafael Rios didn't respond to our invitation. So we'll begin as we always do, candidates, and we'll start with opening statements. And C.O. Perez, I'm going to throw it to you first. Nice and close to that mic, please, and we'll give you about 90 seconds.
Yes, first I'd like again to thank the station for the opportunity to talk to those in the community. As far as my background, I was born and raised in St. Helena, went to Stanford and got transferred over to UC Davis, where I got a degree in viticulture and enology. After getting my degrees, I came back here to the Valley and have been working here ever since. All that time has been as a farmer, and I've been involved with county politics and county issues for over 35 years now, most of the time as a representative of the Napa County Farm Bureau, and as of late, just as a citizen of and resident of Napa County. I'm running for supervisor in hopes of giving a voice back to the community, which over the last decade or so seems to be lacking in regards to the discussions at the Board of Supervisors. And I think by obtaining one of those seats, I will have an opportunity to not only encourage our community to participate in the hearings, but also make sure that their comments and their opinions are listened to and brought to the discussions. Thank you.
Thank you. And let's go next to Matt Hooper for an opening statement.
Well, good morning. It's great to be able to talk to you today. First off, I'm not a career politician. I think you should know that. I'm actually a retired business executive. The last four decades, I've been a corporate patent attorney in the biotech field. I've lived in Rutherford for the past 20 years. I have an undergraduate degree in chemistry and a law degree from Northwestern University. I want you to know why I'm running for supervisor. First, protecting our agricultural traditions is an extremely high priority for me, but I'm also a strong supporter of business. I think that balancing these key elements of our local economy is becoming a growing challenge for the county, and I intend to hit that challenge head on. Secondly, I want to restore your trust in county government. I will always have your best interest at heart, not the interest of outsiders or some mysterious political machine. Third, I've solved many tough problems in my career, and I'm going to bring that expertise to you in county government. Finally, I know that our families are looking for real, tangible improvements in their quality of life. I'll be 100% focused on finding the right answers and delivering that for you. Thank you.
Very good. Moving on next to John Dunbar.
Good morning. Experienced leadership is critical in this position of District 3 supervisor, and I provide 18 years of public service, including 12 years as mayor in Yountville. That's going to help replace the combined 40 years of institutional knowledge that will be leaving the Board of Supervisors this year. I also bring a city and town perspective that will benefit Napa County as a whole and also help represent the small, diverse communities in the rural areas that make up District 3. During the wildfires and public health crisis, especially in the last couple of years, I've worked very closely with not only local and county, but also state and regional agencies to help provide emergency response and information that makes helps us protect our residents, our business community, and it's critical that we have this kind of breadth of knowledge and experience to count on at the county level. I've worked with many different colleagues throughout the state of California in my role with the League of California Cities, The organization that I was president of back in 2019 and 20. And I've really built a lot of relationships, friendships with not only elected colleagues, but other representatives throughout the state and even at the national level. In particular, I'm proud of my endorsement from State Assembly Member Cecilia Aguiar-Curry, the St. Leonard Star Editorial Board, and the Napa County Farm Bureau, among many other elected officials, have recognized my leadership and record of public service as a high priority for District 3.
Thank you. And fourthly, it's Anna Schuto.
Thank you, Barry. Good morning. Good morning to everybody listening. It's so fantastic to be able to be on the Vine this morning. So I am running for Napa County Supervisor because I have served on the St. Helena City Council for 4 years, and I've had a front seat view of all the incredible challenges that our community is facing as we've gone through the pandemic and fires and drought and so many more important issues that have impacted all of our families and seniors who live and make our community so strong. And I want to have a positive impact, not only for right now, but also for future generations. I'm a mom of two kids, and I keep those kids and all of our kids at the forefront when I think about these decisions that we make, and I know that we can do better. So my background, I went to college at UCSB. I had some fantastic educational and work experiences there. I did get my degrees in communication and Spanish. And then I went on and became the executive director of the Channel Islands National Marine Sanctuary Foundation before going to Pepperdine's Business School and getting a Master's Science in Organization Development. I then worked with all different kinds of organizations, a nuclear power plant, a police force, a large hospital, and we would work on servant leadership and how do you truly engage hearts and minds and build trust and work with everyone to make sure that the culture was positive. Those are aspects and values that I bring now to local government. I know we can do better and do better, and I hope I get to be that supervisor. Thank you.
Thank you to all four of you candidates for the opening statements, and we're going to try to rotate who gets to go first, like I often do. Matt Hooper, you'll get the first crack at this first question. Has there been a specific event or issue, a moment that led you to say, I'm running for supervisor? If so, what was it?
Some of it's personal, and some of it is sort of based on public events. I retired 2 years ago from the private sector. I was a corporate patent attorney. And in that role, I had to be a great listener. I had to pull together some fairly diverse constituents. My main role in that job was deals and transactions, so it was very positive. It's sort of helping people achieve something. When I retired, I realized that those talents just shouldn't be sitting around and not being used. I also, just that's a personal sort of note, I also have to say that I have a growing sense that rather than being aggravated by public events and the trends that you see in government at all level, I think participation is incredibly important. I think I bring a combination of skills that will be very useful to the county. I have a legal background, 4 decades in business, a science background. I think those things will be put to very good use in leading county government. So that's where I stand on the reasons and my thinking in getting into this race.
Very good. John Dunbar.
I would say it's really an accumulation over especially the 12 years that I've been mayor in Yountville, but it really did come kind of to a head when I became president of the League of California Cities. And not only was I representing Yountville and Napa County at the state level, but I was representing 482 cities in California. And we worked closely with our county colleagues, also a statewide organization, and working in Sacramento, going to Washington, D.C., and helping be a part of legislation that then affects us here locally, allowed me to recognize that I have the ability with my networking, with my experience, to really make a difference and help affect how laws are written and how they impact us in our rural community here in Northern California. We need that kind of voice to make sure that we're not just waiting for things to be mandated on us, that we are part of the conversations. And working through Cal Cities and with my elected colleagues really built up not only experience, but frankly, some skills that have been proven to be pretty effective.
Anna Shoto.
Thank you. So my elected journey really was started and inspired by the Women's March. I went to that in DC and it changed my life because I started to pay attention to the fact that there weren't enough women in elected office. The second piece I would say was when I came back and got involved as an elected official Napa County wide with Supervisor Brad Wagonecht. We reached out to other elected officials to create for the first time a regional approach to climate action. And I saw our work that there is more that we can and should be doing. I'm from Sonoma County in Alexander Valley, a beautiful rural spot that also connected me to our agricultural roots. We had a vineyard growing up and a garden. We also know that environment so well, and I know that there's more that we can do with climate change. The three contributing biggest impacts for greenhouse gas emissions are transportation, building, and solid waste. There are real solutions that we can start implementing now, and I want to be a part of that. I would say the other two pieces are also my work with First Five Napa County. When I went through that leadership program, I also saw how there's more that we need to do with mental health and with equity. And as a board of supervisor, with all of the millions spent in social services, that's another opportunity to have a big impact.
Thank you. And CEO Perez on this one.
Yeah, actually, my decision to run for Board of Supervisors happened in 2017 when I ran against Diane Dillon in 2018. The big issues at that point, I wasn't happy with the direction that the county was choosing to take in regards to our watersheds, our water resources, and over the time, the erosion that's happened with our ag preserve and what it was intended to protect. Over the last 4 years, not much has really changed. In fact, in some situations with some of these issues, they've gotten worse. So I'm continuing to try and run for supervisor, hopefully be able to take the seat for District 3 and begin having an internal and inside effect in choices that the counties will make. So again, that's when I made the decision to run.
All right, very good. Moving along to another question, and John Dunbar, you'll be first to address this one. Give me a second to set this up. It seems to me that every now and then a particular project comes along that serves as a sort of lightning rod and represents broader concerns. And the project that I'm thinking of right now, of course, is the Walt Ranch project. It's been dominating news coverage, and it has a lot of spillover in a lot of different areas of concern for people who wonder what the future of Napa is going to look like. And it's intersected now with rising concerns about climate change. So the question that I'd like to hear all of you respond to is there a point at which a development project that removes a lot of trees, considering climate change concerns, and introduces development into areas that have been undeveloped previously, is there a point at which the county of Napa just has to draw a line and say, we're not going to do this anymore? Is there a saturation point? Is there a full capacity level for those kind of new vineyard developments specifically?
I think there's been a great recognition of the importance of environmental protection and climate action initiatives. We've certainly taken a lead in Yountville on many of those in terms of gas-powered leaf blower and pesticide bans, methane recapture systems, solar arrays, electric vehicles. Those add up to some significant environmental protection. When it comes to development, whether it's vineyard development or residential development, any kind of development in the county, we have a county general plan that was put together over years. Yes, it can be updated, and it typically is. It should be a living document, not one that sits on a shelf for 20 years and then gets renewed. But we are still within the forecast of development that is in that general plan. I think as we start to get close, if we do, to the levels of development that are set as kind of boundaries in that general plan, that we should be reevaluating it. I think the decisions on development should be based in fact, not emotion. And we can all be both factual and emotional, whether we are approving or have concerns about projects. But I think that's the core, is that we are candid, honest, based in the data, and also honoring the county's general plan and each of the individual cities and town general plans that together provide a significant amount of climate and environmental protection.
Anna Schutto.
Thank you. So with this one, we do need to be looking at our general plan and our conservation regulations. And the key task moving forward is that we update them, keeping in mind all of the changes that are happening with climate change, with drought, with fires. We have seen devastating impacts in our community. So we know that times are different. I think everyone would agree with that, or most everybody. And we need to be doing things differently. On the same vein, people who are wanting to do projects want to follow the rules and know what those are. So that's why we need to be clear and work together to do that hard work so that it's reasonable for everybody. The other thing I would say is that there's more that we can do for tree protection, looking at the whole county. There are wonderful organizations like Napa Resource Conservation District that are already doing this work, and we can expand it if they have more funding. Same thing with our open space. And also Pepperwood Preserve is doing a lot of work where they're actually mapping out key corridors. So I would like to look at a regional approach and figure out where are the areas that we want to protect, and let's figure out how we do that.
And next to CEO Perez on this question.
Yes, I think that we're at a point now where there's truly a question as to whether or not we're already at the limit when it's affecting our watersheds. I think the best thing for the county to do is pause, take the opportunity to really do research and investigation to find out where we are at this point in time. To work off of a general plan that was developed in 2008, we've already seen that that's already outdated. We need to really take a serious look at our CONREGs and develop better protections. We also need to get a better idea in where we are as far as our limits and resources, not just of our watersheds, but effectively the results of the water that we have as well. So rather than passing the line and going too far, as a county, we're going to be much better off to slow down, hold it to where we are now, until we find out more about the science and our resource limitations. And for that reason, I truly think it would be best to propose a moratorium at this time for vineyard developments and other developments in our watersheds to make sure that, in fact, we are protecting something that we still have a sufficient amount of resources on.
Very good. And let's hear from Matt Hooper on this one.
I'm leaning in CEO's direction strongly. I want to sort of rise up above the discussion of, you know, climate change and the general plan this and the rules here and the regulations there. I ask a simple question. Do the residents of the 3rd District want vineyards replacing forested growth on the hillsides? I've had plenty of discussions with my friends in the 3rd District. The answer is a resounding no, okay? And I support that. We have to follow the law. People that come before the board have a right to apply for legal permissions that follow the rules. I just want folks to know that I'm gonna be a pretty tough grader when those permits land on my desk. I just don't wanna see our hillsides replaced with vineyards. And I think I'm in line with much of the thinking in my district.
All right, very good. And I believe, Anna, it's your turn to go
first.
And I want to segue from that question to the Measure L question. For those who aren't acquainted and are listening in, Measure L was put on the ballot by the current Board of Supervisors to create a quarter-cent sales tax increase to fund wildfire protection. There's already a plan in place. There's no continuing source of money. And so this is the method to supply the money that the board has currently proposed. So the question is two-part, I suppose, is do you personally support Measure L? Will you vote for it? Do you encourage other people to vote for it? And then I'll pose the follow-up, and maybe you can speak to both of them. Some who are not in favor of Measure L are saying that the county has plenty of money, could reallocate existing resources, and cover this cost. So speak to both of those if you can, and I'll give you a couple of minutes on that one.
All right. Thank you. For first, yes, I support Measure L very much because fire prevention is so important to preserve and protect our beautiful valley for future generations. We lost an incredible number of homes, businesses, and land valued at $1 billion due to the 2017 and 2020 fires. That is an incredible impact. And my own daughter's classroom at St. Helena Elementary School during one of the fires, out of 15 kids, five lost their homes. This is a serious threat to all of us, and this measure is the way that we fund the work that needs to happen for this, the fires that could come this fall. We've already been warned from our own St. Helena police chief and the fire safe councils that this is going to be a bad fire season. I want to do everything we possibly can to protect our communities, and this is the measure that'll let us do that. So I would say for the second question that you asked, it was for that question about money and is there enough? I say, show me the money. I don't see it. I see that our county is facing so many challenges at once, and I have yet to have heard where that money would be and what else we would cut to get that money. So to me, the plan makes sense to me. I know the projects that they're going to do. I was listening with my friend yesterday in the car to her Fire Safe Council call about all of the incredible projects. I know the details are there and that are good, and this is going to keep us safer. And also there's going to be an oversight committee for how the funds are spent.
Thank you. And now CO Perez on the Measure L question.
On Measure L, I typically don't like sales tax to be used as a method of raising funds for community needs. There's quite a heavy load and burden on the low-income side of families that are already being pressed to be able to afford to live here in the county. That being said, there's really no other choice other than Measure L to develop the funding that truly is needed for the programs for fire protection and fire prevention. I think over the 10 years, there's a 10-year sunset in the proposal, and over that 10 years, we should be looking at other sources of funding which wouldn't involve adding more tax to low-income families and others that are having a difficult time. But I am in favor of Measure L at this point in time. May not be in 10 years when they're looking at renewal, if there's another source of funding that's been developed. For those that think that there's sufficient funds already in the county, we need to consider what those funds are currently going for. If Measure L doesn't pass, I feel that the fire and wildfire issue is important enough to find the money in the current budgets that we have as a county. However, that's with the understanding there's going to be other programs that are also important that it will be reduced by doing that. One of the other things that I think is important for Measure L is we need to have a really good oversight committee. It's extremely important that the monies be used for what they're intended for and not misdirected. And I would like to think that the county would make sure that a portion of those funds are utilized for a quick aircraft response stationed here in the county during the wildfire season and dedicated to the county, unlike the equipment that we get from CAL FIRE, which is statewide and not just county specific.
All right.
Thank you.
And Matt Hooper on this one.
So I support the hard path of fiscal discipline, which is why I don't support Measure L. Honestly, I think Measure L is an admission of failure on the part of the county's ability to manage its finances. I want to put this in perspective. The county has a budget, as I understand it, of $500 million, $533 million. $10 million, which is what would be raised by Measure L, represents less than 2% of that budget. I would like somebody to convince me that we cannot find $10 million in that $533 million budget. The counter argument is that every single dollar in that budget is perfectly and efficiently deployed. I think we need to sharpen our pencils a little bit. I think tax and spend. That's the easy route. The hard route is to look at the budget and prioritize. If fire is important, and it absolutely is, find some things that are less important and redeploy those funds. I think it's hard to do it, but we got to do it.
And John Dunbar.
Yes, I support Measure L. I was one of the elected officials that helped craft the measure, and I'm on the committee along with fire experts and other elected officials and staff that are now working on public outreach and education. And to respond to the second part of your question about, is there enough money already out there? One of the first things I'll ask is, which of the other critical services that the county provides would you like to not fund to find those? And this is a minimum $10 million a year to support the Community Wildfire Protection Plan, but we also need more than that, and that's before we even have the next wildfire. We know that it's going to happen. We don't know when, we don't know how severe or where, but we know we need to be better prepared than we have been in the past. When the argument is that it's a tax that impacts lower income households, this doesn't apply to groceries, healthcare, and housing, which are often the principal costs of households. And so those aren't part of this sales tax. Much more impactful are lost wages, lost jobs. When we do have our wildfires, we've seen that. This is not theory. This has been reality for us too many times already. We need sustainable funding, not just one-time, one-budget funding. And also, often the state and federal dollars that are out there for wildfire mitigation and protection require local matching funds. That's what this is also going to be providing, local matching funds. We need to be able to fund personnel as well as resources, whether that's aircraft, whether that's vehicles that can respond in tight areas that, you know, our county roads and private roads often are too small and too narrow for some of our heavy equipment. So we need some versatility there. There's also an oversight committee that's part of this measure to make sure the funds are spent the way they are supposed to. And there's an allocation formula that specifically calls out what money goes where and to which of the jurisdictions. I ask for those that say that we have plenty of money, is it affordable housing you don't want to fund? Is it health and human services you'd rather not fund? Public safety? Climate initiatives, where is that money coming from?
All right, very good. I'm going to follow up a little bit on that with a question that's more about politics, doing the job of politics, than necessarily about policy. And CEO Perez, it's your turn to go first. When the flood control sales tax was passed in 1998, the legendary story involves a lot of moving parts, but part of that was getting every community in the county and the leaders of those communities to sign on to it. There was a lot of question then, like there is now, about how do I benefit from this? In that era, it was my property doesn't flood. It only affects certain people. Why don't they pay for it? In this case, we hear similar arguments about wildlands and fires. What happened this time around, the Board of Supervisors put this measure on the ballot, but did not gain the support of every elected official. Most notably, the mayor of Napa is not supporting Measure L, which you could represent as a political failure on the part of the current board. So that's sort of the essence of the question. And I want to also, let's just do that one in maybe a minute response to just that specific issue. Is that a political failure, a leadership failure on the part of the current board?
The answer, the short answer to your question is yes, it was a failure on the current part of the board. In the development of the flood control project and the funding for that, there was more time involved. So that was one thing that made it a little bit easier. To get the backing of other community members and other support groups. And for this particular measure, I think that could have been done at least to some degree, because there was a little bit of time involved in developing Measure L. And that should have certainly happened, reaching out to each of the cities, the councils, and bringing them on board and getting them to understand the importance of it. And that was lacking. And that's too important a part to forget, because without that type of support, it's difficult for a two-thirds majority anything to get passed. I'm hoping that the community understands the importance and the value of what these monies will be going for, and the importance of security and community protection. So even though it was short-sighted on the current board not to develop the support and take the time to do that, I'm hoping that the community as a whole, again, understands the value of what will be done with Measure L. And hopefully, I would like it to pass.
And Matt Hooper, your turn on that one.
I have a couple of observations about the political question that you asked. I think there's a couple of areas where the board has not demonstrated competence. First of all, the measure was rushed through. I don't think there was sufficient time for people to really understand it. And the problem, though, is I'm not sure that giving the board more time actually increases their quotient of competence, okay? Because let me give you an example. The climate action plan that's been circulating for like 15 years, they've had plenty of time to work on that. But look at what they did there. They actually went ahead with this and spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on a plan that only addresses the county's climate issues. That didn't make any sense, and we're now just sort of backfilling that mistake. I think the county has a tendency to sort of substitute money for competence, okay? So, you know what, if they can solve a problem by raising a tax rather than doing the hard work of fiscal management, that's the route they'll take. As a supervisor, I'm going to be pushing in a different direction to say, wait a minute, I do understand that there are programs that everyone thinks are important in the lineup, in the budget, but let's prioritize and let's say, wait a minute, you know, $10 million out of a $533 million budget, that doesn't add up to me.
John Dunbar.
I think it's important that we put context to whether it's an individual's hesitancy or opposition to this measure and the reasoning behind it. I'm the only one here that has actually been in on the conversations and part of the discussions and the process specifically. And so I could speak to the context of that, which is there is an urgency that we all, and I will say all of the mayors that are part of the process to develop this measure and move forward with it, recognize the urgency to start raising additional revenues to support not only the Community Wildfire Protection Plan itself, but to make us safer and more prepared for wildfires. We could not delay. There was discussion about, is it the June ballot or the November ballot? And the decision was made, we can't wait to start raising money. If we waited until November, we wouldn't see a dollar until well into 2023, and that leaves us even more exposed this wildfire season. And we know wildfire seasons go year-round, basically, these days. It wasn't about being short-sighted. I frankly take offense to that when people that are not part of the process criticize the process. It was very thoughtful. We had fire experts from not only community FireWise councils, but CAL FIRE, individual city fire departments, as well as elected officials and experts in this area, identifying how do we best craft this measure to create universal support. cities have never had actual wildfire damage in them in these last several years of wildfires. We are all affected by the air quality. We are all affected by the other health risks associated with wildfires, whether those fires are actually impacting our individual properties. And I will say that all of the electeds that have been a part of this process recognize that we need to protect all of our residents, whether it's directly in the path of fire or it's the other effects of these catastrophic wildfires.
Anna Schuto.
Thank you. No, this is not a political failure. I think everybody did the best that they possibly could. We don't live in a perfect world. I would say a lot has changed since 1998 in politics. You just think about everything that's different with media and social media and how it is to all work with each other and just live in the world. And so I believe that the Board of Supervisors and everybody working on it did the best that they could for all of us. And we have heard that Chair Ryan Gregory has said he's waiting for these election results, and then we'll know the next day about whether we can fund these important projects or not based on if this measure passes. It is so incredibly important for funding for fuel reduction work, shaded fuel breaks around communities, and healthy forests. All of that is what we need to protect all of us. And yes, in a perfect world, more time would have been fantastic to get everybody on board, but that's not what we have with fire season coming up.
Thank you all four for your answers on that one. I'd like to stay on the focus on the current board for a moment. Matt Hooper, it's your turn to go first this time. And this question is more about issues that have occurred well prior to Measure L coming up and so forth. There's a general sense of dysfunction, for lack of a better word, when you have personality conflicts among the Board of Supervisors that come to the surface. I think we'd all be naive to think there never have been personality conflicts. But in my viewing of local politics for many years, I've never seen them rise to the level that they're at now, where things are happening and people are talking about them publicly, these personality conflicts among the board. The second issue, of course, is the allegations of conflict of interest around Supervisor Pedroza and the purchase of Vineyard property. I think we all agree that government trust is an issue. It has been forever, more so maybe today than in a long time. So speak to that in the sense of being challengers, being wanting to be new on this board. I'm asking each of you to speak to those issues that suggest dysfunction. Is the current board dysfunctional? If you were on that board, how would you fix that problem?
Thanks. First of all, I want to just start off by saying that if I'm elected to the board, I'm going to bring to that role the same kind of spirit of collaboration and openness and listening that I demonstrated in my professional life. I do see a tendency for this board to be somewhat, you know, conflicted, some personal issues. I just think we need to put that aside. There are five people that at heart want to do the right thing for Napa County. And I think once we sort of agree on that, we should set aside our personal differences and work together to do that, to find the best answer. Sometimes it's a compromise that we're not all happy with, but it's a heck of a lot better than doing nothing. So I really believe that we need to make an effort to be collegial, to be civil, to be respectful toward one another, to listen, and to understand that, you know, we're not just these silos that sort of operate in a vacuum. We have to work together. And the more we work together, the more that we can get done for the county. Now, the second thing about conflicts of interest, I think there's sort of two lanes. There's clear right and wrong that everybody can sort of identify. What the residents are concerned about is when there's sort of a cloud of impropriety, where they're presented with questions like, wait a minute, why is somebody buying property around a development that the board is reviewing? What's going on with that? And we had some citizens that did a great job of sort of bringing that issue to the surface, and I commend them for doing that. I think it's absolutely critical that we avoid any appearance of impropriety. It's more than just kind of black and white, right and wrong. It's a high standard of ethics that restores trust and people's belief that the county government is working for them and not for some kind of backroom political machine or personal agenda.
John Dunbar.
Thank you. I think that one of the most important things that any elected official has to use as a measure every day is public trust. And I have 18 years of public service that I will stand behind and show that transparency and integrity has been a guiding light for me throughout my entire public service career. I also have a record of collaboration, and that's never been more obvious than during the wildfires and the pandemic, where I would reach out specifically to my not only elected colleagues, but to business owners, to residents, to ask what do they need, how can I help, and how can we work together to help. There is a public discourse that, frankly, is uncomfortable. Right now, these days, these years, we've seen it at the national level. We've seen it at all levels of government. And until recently, we've really been immune, I think, to a great degree here in Napa County. I think everyone has a responsibility for being honest and using facts and not just individual agendas to criticize or make accusations. I think if there is data, if there are facts that point to a certain direction, then we can evaluate those. But slandering elected officials with arguments because there is part of a greater agenda behind that, I don't think that's appropriate either. We all, as elected officials, have a higher bar that we are expected to follow. I have followed that my entire career. I will continue to do that because it is important that we can have trust with our residents, that we are serving our community and not just ourselves.
Anna Schutte.
Thank you. So we are all a part of this wonderful opportunity where there's going to be a reset because there's two seats open for supervisor, so both in District 1 and District 3. So this is an incredible opportunity to just naturally change the dynamic that has been there and the interpersonal dynamic. My number one thing is building trust, and that comes through relationships, and that comes from being open and honest with people and also kind. It's all about how we work together, not only with each other, but other elected officials all throughout Napa County and the public and the community. I believe that you can build trust when your actions and your words match each other and are congruent, and that what needs to happen to make sure that we work well together. Thank you.
Thank you. And CEO Perez on this question.
Yeah, again, my involvement with the county over the last several years, it's pretty apparent that there is unrest and dysfunction on the current Board of Supervisors, and it's not actually getting any better. I think that when individuals that are on boards are trying to promote their own personal agendas and not the benefit for the community as a whole, that tends to develop into problems that we have on our current board today. If I'm on the board and other individuals have different opinions, that's fine and that's okay. You have discussions, you talk it through, but if the other individuals have their own personal things involved, I don't think that that's, again, what that position should be doing. The Board of Supervisors should be taking a look at the issue, what's best for the community as a whole, and go from there. Again, I think that the board needs to develop a better policy for transparency. They need to make more public sooner, and they also need to give better answers to the public for their choices. A simple yes or no vote sometimes doesn't allow or doesn't create that transparency that really is needed for the community. And I would do that.
All right. Thank you all for your answers on that. Now, if we do this right, we can get in one more quick round of questions and closing statements. So let's go for 1 minute responses this time. And this is the fun portion where I allow each of you to ask a question of someone else. John Dunbar, I think it's your turn to go first. So you get to address a brief question to one other candidate for a 1 minute response.
Okay. I'll change the person to whom I asked a question at our last forum here. And I'll ask CO, if you could just share with us some, because many of our largest issues are kind of outside of Napa County. They're kind of regional concerns, whether it be housing, transportation, the cost of living, wildfires, even climate initiatives. Can you share with us some of your experience working at a regional level to solve any of these problems with any specific examples you might have?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Part of my history and experience was being on the California Farm Bureau Board at the state level. And there were issues and policies that we were developing and dealing with that were not just local to your own county, but local to every county in California. Issues such as water, land use, developments that were conversion of ag lands to other uses, which, again, the Farm Bureau was doing their best to protect those conversions from happening. So I do have that experience in developing policies that applied statewide, gave the organization a roadmap of legislation that could and could not be supported or opposed. And I think I did quite well. I was pretty well respected at the state level, not just by the California Farm Bureau Board, but a lot of other individuals that were involved at the county levels for Farm Bureau. So I think I have experience that could apply to the regional issues that we have here in the county.
All right. Anna Shuto, you have a chance to ask your question.
Thank you. I'll ask it of Matt. I was just been thinking about earlier comments you said about climate action and climate change. I'm just curious, what do you think we should do in Napa County with climate action work?
I think that's a great question. My concern with the climate action plan that we have right now is, and I've used this analogy before, it's a list of great things we can do. It's like a restaurant menu without any prices, okay? Nobody's taken the time in the last 15 years to cost out from an economic standpoint what the impact on the Valley economy would be, who will shoulder those burdens, will it be fairly distributed? So I like what I read in the Climate Action Plan. I think those are good things to do. I think the piece that's missing right now is who is going to shoulder those burdens and how will we fairly and equitably spread those burdens around the economic base of the Valley. So I think there needs to be more thought about that, and frankly, my desire would be to see as much federal and state support for this so our residents aren't sort of going out of pocket themselves to do these really big things that the Climate Action Plan is looking to accomplish.
CEO Perez, do you have a question?
Yeah, I have a question, and I'll ask this of Anna, though this would be a good question, I think, for any of us. Being on the council in St. Helena, the resource of water for the town itself at times is in question. How would you deal with the shortage of water and growth in the city?
Okay, great. Thank you for that question. That is all about making sure, number one, that we have new modeling in place, because we're seeing new data come from the state of California and our own data from our own staff that times have changed and the water is different. You saw that with the Groundwater Sustainability Agency, the report that came back recently that showed that our aquifer didn't have as much water, or we could be pulling too much, I should say. And we needed, and that number was new and it was concerning. We thought that there was more than there is. And so we're all now concerned. And that's working with everybody, our industry partners, our community, to figure this out, because the water is so important for all of us living here and all of us being able to do business here so we can work on this together. It's going to be all about conservation and making sure that we are upgrading our infrastructure. You see in the city of St. Helena, we know that our pipes are leaking and we lose a lot of water. We can't afford that anymore. We also have to look at our own ordinances. There are things that we can do, like American Canyon, that when you do new development, it has zero landscaping so that people are putting in the right projects. I've seen on the Water Advisory Committee that I'm on in St. Helena over and over again how many problems there are with outside irrigation and how much we lose, both just for the the water-thirsty plants that are out there that you can switch out to be drought-tolerant and so much more.
Thank you. And Matt Hooper, you have the last chance to ask a question.
John, this is for you.
Come close, shocking. Please.
As mayor of Yountville, you supported the town's ban on gas-powered leaf blowers. Unfortunately, that ban created financial hardship for landscape contractors, some of them being small Hispanic-owned businesses. If you're elected supervisor in District 3, what actions will you advocate as a matter of financial and social equity to ensure that the heavy cost of climate-related actions are spread fairly across the county's economic base so that individual small businesses like the mom-and-pop landscapers in Yountville are not unfairly burdened?
Thanks for the question. Actually, we built in a subsidy where we are helping fund those small operators, whether they're in the town of Yountville or outside. So we built in to the gas-powered leaf blower ban a way to help fund any equipment transition that our landscaping businesses have. So we were very sensitive to the economic impacts, the financial impacts. And so we actually built in money. We put in our budget money that whether it be a resident or a licensed landscaper would actually get as much as 75% of the cost covered by the town. I would see a similar way to help subsidize. We do the same with housing, where we do not pass on any new burden of housing development as well as other climate initiatives. We lead with funding along with it. We are sensitive to the fact that often the state mandates without funding, and so we're very sensitive to making sure that we don't do it that way.
And very quickly, a closing statement from Anna Schuto. It's your turn to go first, about 1 minute.
All right. Thank you so much. This has been wonderful. It has been a privilege to serve as a St. Helena City Councilwoman. I have learned so much going through this on doing neighbor-to-neighbor organizing early for fire preparedness, for my Napa County Climate Action Committee work, going through Napa County First Five leadership program and working on racial equity to make sure that we are inclusive and welcoming and do more for families and all families. I've loved working on the affordable housing throughout the Napa County and understanding the projects. I know now that more after being a supervisor candidate, I can see what's working in all of our different cities and want to bring those best practices forward so that we share the approaches throughout our region and just do better. I hope that you'll vote for me for District 3 Supervisor. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. I know you have to leave quickly, so we'll keep talking with CEO Perez next to make a closing statement.
Yeah, again, I'd like to thank the station for the opportunity to have some communication with our residents here in Napa County. Again, I'm the only candidate in District 3 that has the extensive farming background and knowledge that is really needed for District 3, and that the majority of the lands that we have are rural and ag-oriented. I have an extensive history and time involved with county issues through organizations like the Napa County Farm Bureau, other organizations within the county, and in personally participating at the Board of Supervisors and Planning Commission hearings over more than 35 years. I would like to have the opportunity to serve our county better, more directly with the board, and with your vote, I can do that. So please vote for me when you have the opportunity for District 3 Supervisor. Thank you.
Closing statement from Matt Hooper.
I'd like to focus on one of my top priorities. I think it is super important that you trust your county government and you know what it's doing for you or not doing for you and why. I think community outreach to our neighbors with great communication, clear communication, is going to be one of my highest priorities. You deserve county leaders that will talk straight with you and focus on your needs, not the priorities of outsiders. I think you're also looking for county decisions that show some common sense as well as financial sense, leadership that respects your intelligence as well as your wallet. In my professional career, I've delivered on complex, very challenging goals with tight budgets, tight timelines. I'm ready to do that for you. So I'm respectfully asking for your vote on June 7th. Thank you.
And last but not least, John Dunbar.
Thank you. I'm going to reinforce the fact that experienced leadership is critical. especially right now, as two very senior members of the Board of Supervisors are retiring. I have the experience not only in elected office, but in collaborating with my colleagues, with residents, business community, to actually deliver results. I think the best thing that has happened in the last year plus of formal campaigning, but also in my years working with the various jurisdictions, is learning from our residents what the priorities are. If it's in Calistoga and we're talking about the fairgrounds and we're talking about having proper representation from the county, if it's Angwin and we're talking about home hardening and protection from wildfires or evacuation routes, in St. Helena, we're talking about the cost of water and the availability and wanting to make sure that they can get the best out of their city government as well as the county government. In North Napa, there are more concerns about public safety and crime and how we are serving our residents. And then in my hometown of Yountville, where I've been for 24 years and have had the faith and trust in my residents, how I can listen and learn from them and continue to be an effective leader. I look forward to doing that on the Board of Supervisors. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you to all the candidates who were able to make it in today in the District 3 race for Napa County Supervisor. We wrap up our special edition of Wine Country Live right now. Thanks for tuning in.
A Wind Down Media programming exclusive, KVYN 99.3 FM.